Good evening. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington, and this is Crossroads Asia. Tonight on our program, U.S. President Barack Obama says the Senkaku Islands fall under the U.S.-Japan Defense Treaty. The shooting death of a Thai poet raises concerns about rising tensions. And Vietnam surprises some with its decision not to host the Asian Games. It's all ahead on VOA's Crossroads Asia. President Obama today reaffirmed that a decades-old treaty commitment with Japan extends to a chain of uninhabited islands in the East China Sea claimed both by Japan and China.
And let me reiterate that our treaty commitment to Japan's security is absolute, and Article 5 covers all territories under Japan's administration, including the Senkaku Islands.
Speaking at a joint news conference with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe in Tokyo, Mr. Obama said the United States does not believe the status quo should be changed unilaterally and called for such disputes to be resolved peacefully through dialogue.
My hope is that China will continue to engage with us and other countries in the region where we do not take a position on the particular sovereignty of this piece of land or this rock, but we do take a position in making sure that all countries are following basic international procedures in resolving these disputes. And if that happens, then I think not only will China be successful, but I think there's a great potential for Chinese and Japanese cooperation, Chinese and Vietnamese cooperation with the Philippines and China, all of which will benefit the peoples of the region.
China's foreign ministry says the 1960 U.S.-Japan Treaty of Mutual Cooperation and Security was reached during the Cold War and should not undermine China's territorial sovereignty and legitimate rights to the islands it calls Diaoyu. A foreign ministry spokesman said Beijing firmly opposes putting the Diaoyu Islands within the scope of the treaty and urged Washington to respect the facts, take a responsible attitude, and honor its commitment of not taking sides on territorial sovereignty issues. He calls Japan's occupation of the islands illegal and invalid. The islands occupied by Japan since 1895 were administered by the United States after World War II until returned to Japan by treaty in 1972. Joseph Cheng of Hong Kong University tells VOA's Victor Beatty China would prefer a U.S. position that is strictly neutral in the islands dispute.
China is certainly unhappy with the fact that the United States government has come out in a clear-cut manner to say that the security treaty covers the defense of the Senkaku Islands, the Diaoyu Islands in dispute. However, I do believe that the Chinese leaders are aware of President Barack Obama's various gestures to avoid being seen to be in close collusion with Japan to deter China. And China appreciates these gestures, especially after the rather successful informal summit between the two presidents in California in the middle of last year. China's major concern, of course, is what will be the American position with regard to the Japanese government's efforts to revise the Constitution and to explicitly state that Japan is going to enjoy collective security rights in defense matters. So China will probably maintain a wait-and-see attitude.
Do you expect this to develop some sort of a rift in U.S.-China relations?
I don't think so. There are strong suspicions in China that the United States may be rather eager to contain China in view of China's rise. But at the same time, there is a strong consensus in China that China needs good relations with the United States, that China should not provoke the United States. And certainly, there is still a belief that the two countries must work out some kind of accommodation so that both parties can coexist and cooperate in global matters and especially on various issues in the Asia-Pacific region.
President Abe also said during a joint news conference with President Obama that the United States and Japan will be cooperating on a broad range of security and defense issues, saying that Mr. Obama welcomed Tokyo's efforts to review its exercise of collective self-defense. Will that raise concerns in Beijing?
Yes. China is quite worried about the foreign policy and defense policy orientations of the Abe administration. And the Chinese leadership, as well as the Chinese intelligentsia, are broadly concerned with the so-called whiteward swing on the part of Japanese politics, especially symbolized by various attempts to revise the constitution and in the more immediate future to reinterpret the constitution in a way as to confirm that it has the right of collective self-defense.
Joseph Chung of Hong Kong University. Bonnie Glaser, China expert at the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies, tells Victor Beatty Mr. Obama did not break any new ground, although his statement in a Japanese newspaper interview Wednesday and his remarks today represent the first presidential statement on the issue.
This actually comes at a time when I think that the Chinese perceive that they have been dialing back on the pressure on those islands. Last year and at the end of September, after September 2012, when the Japanese purchased these islands, the Chinese were actually conducting patrols in the territorial waters around the islands almost every week. That has really been cut back about 50% since October of last year. And so I think that the Chinese probably are especially irritated that President Obama has said it at this time when I think they are trying to actually lower tensions.
So are you saying perhaps their response might be increased patrolling?
Yes, it is quite possible, I think, in the next couple of days that we will see increased patrols by China. But how long they will continue a higher level of patrols remains to be seen. The Chinese have quite deliberately tried to demonize Prime Minister Abe, but are looking for other ways to mend fences to some extent with Japan by people-to-people exchanges and trying to promote other forms of cooperation. But they will not have a summit meeting with Prime Minister Abe. And there seems to be an international campaign that the Chinese are continuing to pursue to really isolate Prime Minister Abe.
Well, how will this impact U.S. Sino relations?
Well, I think that the Chinese are quite concerned overall about President Obama's visit to the region. Of course, he's not visiting China because he will be going to China later this year when he attends the APEC meeting. And I think this visit appears to the Chinese to be a strategic encirclement tour. So this really could have some negative impact on the U.S.-China relationship. Again, I don't think the Chinese are surprised by the position itself, but I think they're quite unnerved that it was said by President Obama as he begins this tour, first to Japan and then Korea and Malaysia and the Philippines. And many of those countries, of course, are quite concerned about Chinese behavior in the region.
Bonnie Glaser of the Center for Strategic and International Studies. China analyst, lawyer, and author Gordon Chang tells Victor Beatty Mr. Obama's forceful statement about Washington's treaty commitment to Japan provides Beijing needed clarity to check its growing ambitions in Asia.
You know, we have heard Secretaries Clinton, Kerry, and Hagel say the same thing, but the Chinese needed to hear the President of the United States say that. And since he's said that now and will say it again, that is very much a good thing, because that will make clear to the Chinese that the United States will defend those islands. And I think that that will help bring the peace, because I think the Chinese will slink back.
Don't you think there are inherent risks for being so forceful, especially with the emphasis that the president's administration is putting on improving relations with China?
Well, everyone, of course, would like to improve relations with China, but it's very difficult to do that with a territorially aggressive state. You know, we've seen that with Russia. You know, there was many attempts in this administration and the previous one to get better relations with Moscow. But unfortunately, you can't do that with every country. And I think that is also true with regard to China. You know, China wants to be bigger tomorrow than it is today, and it wants the territory of its neighbors, and it's willing to use provocative acts, including acts of aggression. We've seen that, of course, with Scarborough Shoal in 2012 and with Second Thomas Shoal at this very moment. So the problem of being ambiguous, of not being clear, is evident to us now with China's very provocative acts, the incursions into Japanese territorial waters and Japanese territorial airspace around those islands. So the United States has no choice but to be clear about it. Yes, there are risks, but we've seen that the policies that have been pursued have not worked. So we need to try something new, and I think the administration needs to be applauded for that.
Well, Gordon, with the president's backing off of threatened strikes against Syria and also the Russian annexation of Crimea, is this kind of a response to what is happening in other world events?
Yes. Well, the Japanese and the South Koreans were very concerned about the indecisive policies in connection with Crimea, but more important, in connection with Syria. You got to remember that last year the president said that he wanted to use force, but thought he should get congressional approval. Well, the Japanese and the South Koreans wondered whether President Obama would need to go to Congress before he honored America's commitments in our mutual defense treaties with those two countries if those countries were attacked by China or North Korea. So clearly what we're seeing today is the president's trip, which is really one of reassurance of friends and allies, and it's necessary because of these inadequate policies that we've seen in both Syria and in Crimea.
Gordon Chang. Brad Glosserman, executive director of the Hawaii-based Pacific Forum, says it's important to understand that U.S. policy does not recognize the Senkakus as Japanese territory, but only islands that are administered by Japan. He says the statement sends two messages, one to potential adversaries that the United States will stand by its commitments, and the second aimed at reassuring allies. Glosserman in Seoul says the timing of Mr. Obama's visit to South Korea tomorrow couldn't be worse. He says last week's ferry boat accident is a national tragedy that dominates the media and public discussion, and despite North Korea's nuclear ambitions and the future of the U.S.-South Korea Security Alliance, the Obama visit is viewed as almost a distraction. This is Crossroads Asia on the Voice of America. Coming up, the Philippines and Hong Kong reach an accord on the 2010 hostage killings in Manila. The shooting death of a prominent pro-government poet in Thailand is prompting concerns that it could lead to more political violence in the country. VOA correspondent Steve Herman reports from our Southeast Asia Bureau in Bangkok.
The daylight shooting of 45-year-old Kamol Dongfasuk outside a restaurant in the capital is the latest unsolved attack on a high-profile figure in Thailand at a time of political instability. Kamol, better known by his pen name, Mainong Korkonti, was a supporter of the Red Shirt Movement, which backs the government of interim Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawat, who has been battling to stay in office. Kamol was killed in his car in the parking lot of a restaurant Wednesday afternoon. A leader of the United Front for Democracy, the core Red Shirt group, Dr. Weng Tojurakarn, says it is obvious from the crime scene and the two wounds on the victim's chest that the activist artist was assassinated at close range.
I think that the bullet come from the pistol not very far from my name. So the assassin must be very close, maybe not more than 1 meter.
Kamol had spoken out against Thailand's harsh Less Majest law, under which those convicted can face up to 15 years in prison for defamation of the royal family. The Red Shirts are often labeled as being against the country's monarchy, something their leaders deny. a retired Army Major General, an anti-government figure who runs a private hospital in Bangkok, recently set up what he calls the Rubbish Collection Organization to flush out those allegedly insulting the monarchy. Dr. Wing says he sees no coincidence between the establishment of the new group and the latest killing. He calls for its founder, Dr. Rintong Nana, to denounce the lethal attack. Dr. Rintong declined a VOA request for an interview. UDD leader Wang says the red shirts, despite their anger at being targeted, will not retaliate.
We resolutely stand on the nonviolent method. So even we do know that mining has been killed by the political conflict, we still tell our colleague that please don't use the violent method because we can't overcome or solve the political conflict by the violent method.
The U.S.-based Human Rights Watch non-governmental organization is calling for Thai authorities to investigate the killing and bring whoever is responsible to justice, wherever that investigation leads. The group's statement also notes the recent formation of the pro-monarchy organization, which calls those accused of committing lese majeste offenses garbage and vows to exterminate them. Human Rights Watch says Kamal's death can only worsen the already tense political situation in Thailand. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
Philippine officials say issues surrounding the deadly botched rescue attempt of Hong Kong nationals held hostage at a Manila park nearly 4 years ago have been resolved once and for all. From Manila, Simone Orendine reports.
Philippine Cabinet Secretary Jose Rene Almendres says a series of meetings between the Philippine and Hong Kong governments over 7 months resulted in the Philippines meeting four demands of the victims and their surviving family members. On state-run television, Almendres, who led negotiations, said the government offered condolences, undisclosed reparations, reassured the victims it would hold accountable those responsible for the bungled rescue attempt, and take measures to ensure the safety of tourists. Almendres says Wednesday was the first time Philippine officials met face-to-face with a small number of the victims and their surviving families, and the government's sincerity was on the line.
That was the most difficult and challenging option that needed to be in place, despite the fact that we were tons and inches of documents that were signed off. At the end of the day, the family said, we will see if the sincerity is there. So I'm happy to report that that came across really well.
In August 2010, a disgruntled former policeman who was heavily armed hijacked a tour bus filled with Hong Kong nationals and demanded he be reinstated. The day-long hostage situation resulted in 8 deaths and 7 injuries after a police SWAT team tried to break into the bus and exchanged gunfire with the ex-officer. Since then, victims and their families had been calling for an official apology from President Benigno Aquino on behalf of the Philippines. The president refused, saying the entire country could not be held accountable for the actions of one man. The administration instead expressed condolences and offered compensation. The president and Hong Kong's chief executive had a lengthy discussion on the issue of the non-apology at the APEC summit in October, which prompted negotiations. In November, Hong Kong threatened sanctions against Philippine passport holders and non-renewal of its thousands of contract workers if the victims' 4 demands were not met. The first sanctions against the Philippines that revoked government workers' visa-free privileges to Hong Kong went into effect in February. Philippine officials met with Hong Kong government officials Wednesday. In a statement afterward, Hong Kong Chief Executive CY Leung said the two governments and the victims reached consensus on the resolution of the 4 demands. He said the Philippine government expressed its most sorrowful regret and profound sympathy and extends its most sincere condolences. Leung says the sanctions, as well as a years-long travel ban to the Philippines, were lifted as of yesterday. On Thursday, a spokesperson for China's foreign ministry said Beijing is pleased to see that this issue has been properly resolved in the end. Hong Kong legislative counselor Albert Chan was one of the authors of the sanctions. He says emotions are still high in Hong Kong over the lack of an official apology.
Something not satisfactory for this conclusion, but you know, since the victim's family already expressed that they accept this arrangement, and we don't want to drag this on indefinitely because this will add stress to the families of the victims.
Chan says relations between the two governments have slightly improved, but he says Hong Kong people are still extremely angry and sad over what he calls President Aquino's unwarranted attitude. Simone Orendine for VOA News, Manila.
This is Crossroads Asia on the Voice of America. Last week, the Vietnamese government surprised many with its decision not to host the 2019 Asian Games. However, many inside the country have welcomed the decision. Marianne Brown reports from Hanoi.
Being ranked a not-so-lofty 116 in the FIFA World Ranking Table, Vietnamese fans at any big football match can attest to high enthusiasm when it comes to supporting their country in international events. Football tends to rouse the most fervour, with the logos of top teams like Manchester United, Inter Milan and Barcelona often emblazoned on motorbikes, helmets and clothing. But other sports like badminton and martial arts are popular too. That's why the government's decision not to host the Asian Games in 2019 came as a surprise to many observers, including Vietnam expert Professor Carl Thayer from the University of New South Wales in Australia.
This is a country that likes to be a centrepiece, that is sports mad. It just surprised me because Vietnam usually has always grabbed these opportunities to showcase itself.
However, the reaction from inside the country suggests that many saw it coming. In a statement released late Thursday, Prime Minister Nguyen Thanh Duc said Vietnam did not have enough experience at hosting large sporting events and was also facing socio-economic difficulties. Hosting an international sporting event can contribute to socio-economic development, promoting the country's images and increasing its position, the statement said. But if the event is not a success, the effects will be reversed. Hanoi won the bid to host the Games in 2012, beating the Indonesian city of Surabaya. However, the anticipated costs were criticised by the public amid concerns for the country's economic growth rate, which at 5% annually has been hampered by inefficient state enterprises and a beleaguered banking system. The costs of hosting the event were estimated at $150 million, according to local media reports, but some put the price tag much higher. The move prompted some speculation that Vietnam was wary of bad publicity following Russia's experience hosting the Winter Olympics in Sochi. Thayer says he does not think this was likely.
Who except for a handful of people would be worried about the expense? It strikes me, unless it's, high-speed rail, that's an expense that the Prime Minister loses, but on the Asian Games, it would mean, circuses for the masses.
Hoang Quoc Vinh, Director of International Cooperation at the Vietnam Sports Administration, said in an email to VOA that the Vietnamese government has invested a lot in this area, especially in encouraging young talent. He said it was a pity Vietnam is not hosting the Asian Games, and described the feeling like when a football is about to go into the net, but suddenly changes its direction and finally lands outside the net. However, he said the faith and thirst for championship always stays inside sports people, adding, "I believe that Vietnamese sports will have many opportunities to win in the future." The news has been generally welcomed inside Vietnam. Economist Nguyen Quang A said he supported the move, adding it was a brave decision. He said the government admitted the decision to host the event was made too quickly. While the country risks losing face by backing out now, but the situation would have been much worse if it had gone ahead and held the games. The Vietnamese media were positive about the move. Newspaper Toi Che wrote, "Many Vietnamese people have hailed the Prime Minister Nguyen Thanh Duc's decision to withdraw Hanoi as host of the 2019 Asia Games." Before the decision was announced, the newspaper said it held a survey on whether Vietnam should host the Games. Of more than 13,600 respondents, 84% did not support the idea. Reports quoting officials at the Olympics Council of Asia said a decision on who would host the event instead of Vietnam in 2019 would be made at the next Asia Games, which is held in Incheon, South Korea, in September and October. Two other countries have dropped out of hosting the Games, South Korea in 1996.